The next case in our calendar is 05-2030, Mahoning County Bar Association versus Richard Olivito. Mr. Slipsky is not checked in. Is Mr. Slipsky here? Are you? Okay, you need to check in next time so we know. Okay, thank you. Ms. Brown.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, I am Paula Brown, and along with co-counsel Max Kravitz, we represent Richard Olivito. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
What's your time there?
As realtors stated in the hearing brief, this is an unfortunate case. It began with a simple neglect of a legal matter. The neglect may or may not have been actionable under the Supreme Court's rules for the government of the bar and the Code of Professional Responsibility. But for the manner to which Olivito responded to his neglect, this matter might not be before this board. Mr. Olivito should not be punished for trying to defend himself against these allegations. If the alleged neglect was not actionable based on the Acolis complaint, it should not rise to the level of a license suspension. From the beginning, Mr. Olivito admitted that he had signed the Acolis name to the bankruptcy petition. He did this to further the Acolis interest, not his own. Richard Olivito has been licensed to practice law in the state of Ohio since 1989. He was retained by the Acolis after he had successfully completed a matter for their son. When the Acolis first came to see Mr. Olivito, they had two issues that they wanted him to work on. One of those was a license suspension. Mr. Acolis's driver's license had been suspended, and he worked for himself, so it was a top priority for them to get that taken care of. And the other was the bankruptcy issue. Mr. Olivito tried to help the Acolis. He asked for $100 for the license suspension issue and $350 for the bankruptcy. So a total, he had received $450. It appeared that the Acolis' first priority, again, was the license suspension. And as Mrs. Acolis said in her depo, that's what we came to you for. When Mr. Olivito was unable to be successful on the driver's license issue, he was honest with the clients, and he even volunteered to return or to put some of the $100 he had received for the license issue toward the bankruptcy issue. So $450 to work on two issues, one of which was the license suspension. He's put $200 to $250 toward the filing fee. So essentially, he received no money in this matter. The bankruptcy was discharged on the original petition filed by Mr. Olivito, and no additional schedules or items were required. The Acolis may have been inconvenienced by this process or during this process, but they were not harmed. Mr. Olivito did his best to represent the Acolis. He was ill at the first hearing on December 15th, and although there have been, there were some comments as to whether he called in before or when he called in, who he spoke to. It's clear from the December 29th, 2003 transcript of the hearing before Elaine Greaves that she was notified that Mr. Olivito was ill on December 15th. It is also clear that Mr. Olivito was at the December 29th hearing to ensure that the interest of his clients were met. The hearing panel erred when it did not accept the fact that Mr. Olivito believed this bankruptcy was complex. He said, "I'm not a bankruptcy expert." He had some difficulty at the beginning trying to decide if he was to file one bankruptcy or two bankruptcies, because Mr. Hakola had represented that he had his own business, and Mr. Olivetto wasn't sure which way to go with that and which way would be best for the clients. He testified, it did take him some time because he was trying to figure out which way to go, and probably that's the best thing for all of us to do rather than to rush in and maybe file something that would jeopardize our client's interest. There's a learning curve sometimes, and I think that you have to take the time to figure out what is in the client's best interest. Mrs. Acola admitted she didn't provide Mr. Olivetto with a credit report. She testified that when she came in, she only brought him bills relating to the household. And there were other things that Mr. Olivetto had to get to complete this bankruptcy. Based on the letter written by Mr. Acola regarding his driving privileges, the Acolas met with Mr. Olivetto in May. And there's documentation that Mr. Olivetto obtained additional bills in June of 2003. And a paralegal began to work on this matter the beginning of August. And she testified that it took a month. There's not much of a documented delay in this matter. Mr. Olivetto never lied to or misrepresented anything to the Acolas. And from the depositions and the hearings, it appears that there was the attorney-client relationship broke down after the petition was filed. There was no testimony that the Acolas tried to get in touch with Mr. Olivetto after the petition was filed. The hearing panel also erred when it found that on the issue of withdrawal, on the way that Mr. Olivetto had withdrawn from his representation. Mrs. Acola filed a grievance with the Bar Association on December 15, 2003. In her grievance, she stated she had to hire another attorney. And in another place on the form, I want my money returned so I can hire another attorney. By her own words, she discharged Mr. Olivetto. An attorney is required to withdraw when the client has discharged him. And even though he had filed a motion to withdraw, Mr. Olivetto still attended the December 29th, 2003 hearing because an entry had not been filed yet, and he wanted to make sure that the interests of the Acolas were taken care of. And at the December 29th, 2003 hearing, the Acolas stated and reaffirmed what they had put in the December 15th complaint, that they did not want Mr. Olivetto to represent them and that they wanted to go on alone at this December 29th hearing. The practice of law is not an exact science. Not every delay, not every less than perfect or unfavorable outcome should rise to the level of a disciplinary violation. The Acolas may have been inconvenienced by having to attend more than one hearing, but their debts were discharged based on the petition filed by Mr. Olivetto. They were not harmed. This was an isolated incident, not a course of conduct. There was no injury to the Acolas.
Well, I assume you should say economic injury, because wasn't there a lack of communication? They kept calling him, and the only person they could talk to was the paralegal or the secretary.
That's what Mrs. Acola stated, that she had testified that she had made calls to the office, and that in August, she did speak with the paralegal numerous times, even in the evening.
There was considerable delay. They were anxious to have their bankruptcy filed and be discharged, and there was considerable delay, was there not? Isn't that, we say no harm. to many people, the abuse of their time and causing them to whatever anguish they have because the lawyer does not perform his or her services as expected. That's harm, is it not?
I would respectfully disagree with the considerable delay. Even in the panel hearing, they recognized this could have been 5 months from the time that Mr. Olivito met with the Acolas to the time this was filed, to the petition was filed. There was documentation that he did acquire some bills that the Acolas had not given him in May. He acquired those in June. There was testimony from the paralegal that she began working on this in beginning of August, and it wasn't finished until beginning of September. It was filed in October.
What kind of practice does Mr. Olivito have?
He has a general practice.
Have there been any complaints filed against him other than this?
No, not
throughout his whole career.
No.
This is the only thing.
This is the only one that I am aware of, Your Honor. The realtor stipulated at the hearing that Mr. Olivito did not act out of selfish or personal motives in filing the bankruptcy petition for the Acolas. Mr. Olivito has a reputation for defending the poor and the downtrodden. He works hard with the limited client funds that he gets, and he tries to do the best he can for his clients. He may not have been an experienced bankruptcy attorney, but he got the job done. The petition was filed and the client's debts were discharged. If, as an attorney, you take too long to complete a task that someone with more experience may complete in less time, that cannot count as a basis for a disciplinary violation and a license suspension. Mr. Olivito did the best he could for the Acolas, and I have nothing further at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Mr. Slipsky.
May it please the court, Honorable Justices, Chief Justice Moyer, Attorney Kravitz, Attorney Brown. I am Ron Slipsky, and I represent the Mahoning County Bar Association. Bizarre. That is not my word. That is the word that the Board of Commissioners on Grievances and Discipline used on two occasions in its report and recommendation to this court to describe the conduct of Attorney Olivito in this case and in the disciplinary process. Webster tells us that bizarre means odd, involving sensational incongruities. And I must tell you, that certainly describes this case and this disciplinary process. I use the word obfuscate. Webster tells us that obfuscate means darken, make obscure, confuse. That also describes it, but I think the board's word bizarre was better. Unfortunately, you don't have the opportunity to observe all of that, and you have to read it in the cold, dry record. But I must tell you, the record is full of multiple incongruities, multiple efforts to obscure, multiple efforts to confuse. It's like a metaphor to an onion. Each time we peeled a layer away, we found another layer, and each layer made one's eyes water. He tried to mislead. He tried to confuse the Bar Association. He did everything he could to cover up the neglect. They continue to try to use my comments in the one brief against me that but for, but he did respond that way. The Bar Association presented its case to the board by way of deposition testimony. It's interesting to note that that deposition testimony, all of the direct evidence consisted of 116 pages. All of the material, and I hesitate to call it cross-examination because most of it was not, All of the rest of the material conducted by Mr. Olivito is 426 pages. Per the board's description of those depositions, they used the word obfuscate. They said that Olivito wasted time. He attacked his own clients. He attacked other witnesses. He argued with opposing counsel. He asked irrelevant questions. He asked redundant questions. He was argumentative.
But should his behavior at the hearing be considered in this disciplinary matter? Shouldn't we just be looking at what is before the panel, the complaint?
Not if you consider the purpose of what he was doing, and the purpose was to try to hide the truth. That's why he did what he did. He made speeches. He tried to confuse everything. Every time you asked him a question, there was some other issue that had to be chased down.
Is there some medical problem?
I am not a doctor. I cannot
answer. No, I mean, was anything raised that there's anything wrong with Mr. Olivito?
I'm not sure raised by whom. I'm not sure what you're asking.
Well, that it came up in the hearing.
As record evidence?
Yes.
No.
Sometimes in the hearing, we see frequently, in fact, too frequently, we see problems with alcohol or problems with a family member who's been ill and they've been caring for all sorts of sort of mitigating sort of circumstances that the respondent offers at the hearing that the panel then considers and we consider. But I think in response to Justice Resnick's question, you're saying there's none of that in this record. That
Olivito offered none, and I had none. As you know, our role as attorneys in that situation relate to the Ohio Lawyers Assistance Program. I'm not sure how far the court wants to question me about
it. The recommended sanction is quite serious for the offense. It would appear then that from your comments that it's really based upon his behavior at the hearing.
Absolutely not. It's based upon his first of all, it's based on his neglect, which I intended to get to in a second. And there is neglect. There's lots of neglect. And I can go through it item by item for the court if you'd like. So there's neglect. Then, when he appears before the bankruptcy court, let's back up. On the petition itself, he forges his client's signatures in three places under the heading under perjury. He then shows up at the first bankruptcy hearing and he tells bankruptcy trustee Elaine Graves that he had permission to sign their names. He did not. He tells her that this was a complex bankruptcy. It was not. He tells her that it was such a complex bankruptcy that he had to hire an ex-bankruptcy trustee to work with him, to go over the petition, to approve everything, and to give him the green light to file this extremely complex bankruptcy. We chased down this so-called ex-bankruptcy trustee. He is very skilled in bankruptcy work. He is not and never has been an ex-bankruptcy trustee. He so testified. He testified he never told anybody he was an ex-bankruptcy trustee. He testified that he never helped Olivito with any bankruptcy matter whatsoever, yet alone the Ecola bankruptcy. He testified that he did nothing on the Ecola bankruptcy. So that's the complexity, that part of it. Then he goes on and says that he saved the Ecola's home for them. The Ecolas don't own a home. He forged his name to a bankruptcy petition months before, indicating that the Ecolas did not own any real property. He forged their name to that document. When I questioned him about that, I said, why did you show up at the bankruptcy hearing and represent to the bankruptcy trustee that one of the things that you had done for these people was save their home, when in the bankruptcy petition you indicated they owned no home? His response was he was skeptical about what his clients told him. He didn't believe them. He thought, in fact, they owned real estate. And that's how this whole thing went, one after another. Then the question becomes, if you didn't believe that they owned real estate, why would you put on a bankruptcy petition that they own no real estate? You don't believe them. You forge their names to it. You file it. You show up at a bankruptcy hearing, and then you tell the bankruptcy trustee that you saved their home for them when you did Nothing of the sort. Nothing.
Let me jump ahead, Mr. Slipsky. We see in these cases, it seems to me somewhat increasingly, not, it's just anecdotal, but I've done no empirical study on it, but pattern of lawyers flat out lying. They make a mistake and they engage in this web of lies, which it seems to me we see here. My concern with a determinate sanction, if you will, where 2 years recommended, 2 years out with 1 year suspended if, or 1 year stayed if the lawyer acts properly during the time that he's out. But all they have to do is file an application and say I've taken CLE and I've done the things I'm supposed to do, with no review of the lawyer to determine whether the lawyer has really changed his or her conduct, their attitude about what it is to be a lawyer, that being honest is one of the most important traits of being a lawyer. Here, it would seem to me that Mr. Oliveto doesn't get it. Are you at all concerned with the board's recommendation that he will be allowed to be readmitted to the practice of law by simply filing this form rather than having the review that one is required to have if it's an indefinite suspension? Indefinite suspension seems here to be would be a heavy suspension, but in view of his pattern of lying, I would be very concerned to have him readmitted to the practice of law, not knowing whether he's learned anything from this experience and from his suspension. What's your response to that?
I share the same concern. I share a serious concern in this case of Mr. Oliveto continuing to represent clients if he does the same thing in other cases that he has done here.
Counsel, is there any suggestion that there's other cases out there that he has performed this deficiently and with this degree of dishonesty?
There are no complaints that have been filed with the Board of Commissioners on grievances and discipline.
Or with the local bar association?
Well, you've got some rules of,
yes.
of
oh, I'm sorry.
Confidentiality.
Yeah.
You may cannot, have some difficulty, I think. In,
I think Mr. Coghlan has taught me to say, I cannot confirm or deny.
Yeah. He's been practicing law for how many years?
10 years?
35.
Since 89.
Since 1989.
89, 17 years. And he's only had this complaint.
I cannot confirm or deny.
Okay.
I would like to address the motion to withdraw before.
A formal complaint. You can answer that?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
None that has been certified by the Board of Commissioners. I would like to, my time is running out quickly. The motion to withdraw. They argue in their objections that this was just a formality because his clients had discharged him. That is not accurate. And I didn't make the argument in my brief, but it occurred to me as I prepared for this argument, the most startling piece of evidence that goes absolutely against that is his motion to withdraw. Take a look at his motion to withdraw. It is Exhibit 20. Practicing lawyers know that the best way to get a court to allow you to withdraw is if your client discharges you. That's almost a rubber stamp. There are very few judges that are going to make you stay on a case if a client has discharged you. In his motion to withdraw, the word discharge isn't there. Again, his motion to withdraw has misrepresentations and dishonesty in it. The motion to withdraw says that he wants to withdraw because he has not been paid even some small amount of money for doing this work. Not true. Opposing counsel admitted it right up. He was paid money. He was paid money the very first time. And again, the weave continues. If you go back to the bankruptcy petition, when you file a bankruptcy petition, you must disclose to the bankruptcy court whether or not the attorney has been paid a fee. In the petition, he puts, he has been paid no fee. I don't know what the motivation of all of that was. That was before any complaint was filed against him. I suspect that what happened is as the Acolas continued to badger him to do something and he wasn't responding, that he became concerned that something like this might happen, and he was in a hurry to get a bankruptcy petition filed to get them off of his back. Lastly, in terms of the sanction, we asked for 2 years without anything stayed. That's a pretty heavy sanction. How we remedy the problem we discussed, I don't know, but if you look at Jerzenko and you look at Fauerbach and you look at the cases that are identified in Jerzenko, Jerzenko was a neglect of a legal matter, a failure to return monies, and a failure to cooperate. In Jerzenko, there was a 2-year suspension with 1 year stayed. I would submit to the court that this case is much, much more serious than the Jerzenko decision. And I would ask the court to adopt the report and recommendation of the Board of Commissioners because that is more apropos to the situation here. All of the cases for reducing the sanction that are cited by the respondent involve only the forgery issue, involve only the signing of documents without permission, affidavits that where the affidavit itself is typed in after the person signed. They don't involve misrepresentations to the court, numerous misrepresentations to the Bar Association. And again, that bizarre activity during the disciplinary process, it's because he continued to try to put layer upon layer to try to mislead about how complex it was, what a serious civil rights lawyer. His testimony about being a tremendous civil rights lawyer is all over the record. I don't know what that has to do with this. About his car being, his telephone being tapped, all of those kinds of things. It's a much more serious case.
Counsel, were those comments out of context to responses he was in the process of giving or questions he was in the process of asking? How did this, there's a list of some sentences or statements made, and I'm not sure how those came about.
Those were questions that he posed to the Acolas on cross-examination.
Like, did you know that my telephone is being tapped?
Correct. I would urge the court to adopt the report and recommendation of the board. It is well written, it is well reasoned, and it is supported by the authority that is as close to on point as you're going to find. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Slipsky. Ms. Brown, you've saved about 3 minutes of your time.
The behavior in Jerzenko was much more egregious than anything that occurred here. Jerzenko had, it was at least two clients, and he was to file bankruptcy petitions. He took the client's money. He told the clients the bankruptcies had been filed when they hadn't. And when the bar tried to investigate, Jerzenski would not cooperate with the bar. Richard Olivito never lied to his clients. He did the bankruptcy, it was filed, and their debts were discharged. When the Bar Association requested an investigation, he cooperated with that investigation.
How do you explain his behavior at the hearing?
Your Honor, he was defending himself. There were misstatements, there were mistakes, but he was defending himself. He wasn't lying. He took $450 for two actions. He essentially ended up with no money in this situation. He tried to do his best for the clients. He thought he did his best for the clients. And then a complaint is filed. And I think he was trying to figure out, how was I negligent?
Well, counsel, what about the statement that he hired a bankruptcy expert? Let's just take a few of these examples here. That's a lie.
Mr. Hollister testified, well, he did a deposition. Mr. Hollister was, did bankruptcy, did federal bankruptcy.
Did he work on this case with your client?
There was some confusion in that. Quite honestly, I know when I read the deposition, it and it's been a little while since I read it, but it almost seemed as Mr. Olivito felt that he had discussed this, the Colas matter, with John Hollister.
But he said he hired an ex-bankruptcy trustee. That was not truthful.
Hired may not have, may have been a mistake in how he said that. Ex-bankruptcy trustee, I believe there was some information in the deposition that the John Hollister stated that often the person he rented space from, her first name is Sarah, that she had said to people that he was an ex-trustee. So there was some confusion.
Well, is it true that Mr. Hollister apparently testified that he was walking through the office and saw a piece of paper in the paralegal's whatever machine and thought it was one of his clients and looked at it for 30 to 60 seconds, he said, and didn't give any advice on it? Is that not true?
That's what Mr. Hollister did testify to in his deposition.
The panel apparently believed him rather than your client.
Well, and I wish I had the deposition with me, because as I recall, it seemed that when Mr. Olivito cross-examined Mr. Hollister, that there was some question as to maybe Mr. Olivito had discussed the Acolas case but not mentioned them by name. And maybe that conversation became more important to Mr. Olivito
particularly
than it did
if he was
to
trying
Mr.
to,
Hollister.
Especially if he was trying to convince his client that he took him a longer time than it did. I mean, okay.
What is the sanction you're seeking here?
Mr. Olivito has admitted to signing the Acolas names to the bankruptcy petition. The cases that are on precedent in this court have held that the public reprimand or a six-month stayed suspension. As this court has
said, you
need
to sum up your lights on.
Thank you. As this court has said in prior decisions, the purpose of the disciplinary process is not to punish the offender, but rather to protect the public. Mr. Olivito completed the task that the Acolas had hired him to do, and the Acolas were not damaged by Mr. Olivito's actions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. The case is submitted, and you'll be advised of our opinion.